Food Talk with Mike Colomeco is brought to you by Cento at cento.com, Colavita at colavita.com, and Wines of Portugal at winesofportugal.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey folks, welcome. Mike Colomeco here. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network on the internet. Yeah, that's how everyone gets their stuff these days. Anyway, Heritage Radio Network, Mike Colomeco's Food Talk, the show. I don't know how this is going to work today. We've gone from some really easy shows where we had like one or two guests in studio, like my buddy Bill Evans, a couple of weeks back, to the usual juggling of in-studio guests, which is usually easy if they make it here. Out to Bushwick, but today, to make Liz's life very difficult, I have three guests that are scheduled at 10-minute intervals, back-to-back, starting in a couple of minutes, and the first one's a weird conference call number. So we'll see if it works. I don't know how the show's going to work today, but I do know this, that in a short period of time, possibly 20, 25 minutes, maybe less, we have Missy Robbins on. Chef Missy Robbins, if you don't know. I'll do the whole Missy Robbins intro later, but she's great. She's really one of the giants here in the New York industry. I don't know. I don't want to go into the whole female chef phenomenon. But yes, she's a woman and she's a chef and she's great and she's a hardworking badass. And anyway, I'll do her whole story when she's here in studio. And I have to thank the chef here at Roberta's, Carlo. He sent me over some really beautiful stuff as a snack, which he's never done before. I don't even know he knew I existed on planet Earth, but he must. Thank you, Carlo, the chef here at Roberta's. And I love his pizza. So a couple shout-outs this week. I've been trying to get up to the Upper East Side, which is, I guess, what you'd call the 50s on the East Side. 55th, I'll consider that the Upper East Side. Although, theoretically, it's probably north of 57th, so maybe Midtown East. But it's not an area I go much. I work out uptown every morning, and then I bike home as soon as I can, get back down south of 14th Street, and then south of Houston, and then even in my case, south of Delancey, where I live, and that's where I like it. I like it downtown, down there. But there's a whole world north of me, and I'll go for talent, and I just discovered one. So Emma Bengtsson is her name. She's a Swede, grew up south of Gothenburg, and she took over as the chef at Aquavit last fall, really, kind of reluctantly. She's funny. She wasn't angling for the job. You know, Aquavit's where Marcus Samuelson kind of blew up. He had a long, long run there. And then he was replaced by someone whose name escapes me, but a Swedish guy chef. And his pastry chef was Emma. So she had a big, long resume in Sweden and then came here and was doing the pastry at Aquavit for years. And then the owner, when the chef left, the owner said to her, Emma, how about if you become the chef? And she really didn't want to do it. She was really hesitant. But I guess with some cajoling, she took over. And I had her probably the last week of her winter menu, although the way this winter's going, we're probably eating winter menus into July. It's going to snow again in New York. I can't effing believe it. I can't believe it. I can't believe it's going to snow like tonight into tomorrow and then turn to rain and yuck, and it's the middle of March. Whatever. This has to be the last one, but I said that the last time. Anyway, she's great. Her food's amazing. We sat down and had the full tasting menu with great wines to match, and I really, really loved her cooking. Super humble, super talented, 30 bloody 2 years old. She's a kid, and she's a competitive salsa dancer, too, which has nothing to do with anything except it's kind of funny for Swedes. I don't know. Do they dance? Do they smile? I mean, really? Yeah, she does like a Dominican version of salsa in a badass way. So I'm going to go back there to eat because the menu's changing in another week or two. I'm going to go back there and eat again with the new menu and also hang out with her in the kitchen because I really loved what she was doing. Aquavit's the name of the restaurant. It's 55th Street between Park and Madison. Really good place. Also, a shout-out to a chef friend of mine where we filmed for our PBS season this year. David Santos is the chef at Loro. Loro's a little place in the village. It's on West 10th, kind of one of those little streets that runs from connects nothing to nothing. And he's just this... I've known him as a person, well, chef, known him as a chef. And I have to tell you, this guy, all I think he thinks about is food. Like, he dreams about food. When his day's off, he's cooking, he's pickling. I mean, if you go into that restaurant, everything you're eating on the menu, everything, bread, everything, all the, he's, everything he does in-house, he's nuts. He's, like, really in love with the craft. So I filmed there a couple of months back, and after we filmed, I had my son come in and meet me. We had a great post shoot dinner, which is pretty common. It's kind of like we're all done shooting, so we drink a bunch of booze and drink a lot of wine and order a lot of food. And yeah, it's like the Game of Thrones there, where it's the end, the battle's over, let's party. And I hadn't been back since because my job's to go to new restaurants all the time. I can't go, which is stupid because I can't go to the places I love because that's not work, right? That's a night off. But anyway, I went back, took my son, took his girlfriend. That was the night she announced she got a job at NYU as a nurse. David Santos's food is so good. It's just so good. And Sean, my son, eats that with me once a week, so he's eaten at some great restaurants in the last year and change since he's been in the city. He was just saying it's better. I'm not going to mention names, but it's like one of his top four or five restaurants in town. And it is. It's so fun. It's so good. Congratulations to David Santos. Business was good last night, so that's always nice to see on just kind of a weird average Wednesday night in still winter. Then I went to see Bill Frisell at the Vanguard, which is why I wanted to eat at Loro, because I wanted to go see Frisell at the Vanguard, which is a block away. Bill Frisell is one of my favorite guitarists on planet Earth. Just a bloody genius. And it was just him and a bass player, which is great because it's just the two of them playing off each other. And it was, as always, just an epiphany. He's a giant. I recognize his wife because she sits in the seat that I always sit in, which is the last seat at the bar. It's my favorite seat in the place. But when Bill's there and his wife's there, that's her seat. So I got to sit next to her. And Steve Earle was there. Yeah, Steve Earle was in the audience. One of my favorite alt folk Looney Tunes singers, great, maybe one of the greatest songwriters out there today, an acolyte of the late and great Towns Van Zandt, the Texas phenomenon, who was really one of the great underrated singer-songwriters, period. Liz, dear, we do not have... Okay, so that happens. So, see, our first guest, is we're going to bail on this. We're gonna wait a couple of minutes. Why don't I introduce you, and you and I start talking? We're going to have to do this. I know this is crazy. You probably don't need headphones unless you want to hear...
Don't,
you don't. Just get that mic really... Make the mic really close to you.
That's exciting.
There you go. So this is the voice of Missy Robbins. Now, Missy, we're going to interrupt each other. This is going to be a weird interview, but you're here, so let's talk.
Great.
In a couple of minutes, we got a guy in Ireland... No, not Ireland. Gabrielle... You know Gabrielle Gershenson?
Yeah.
Gabriella.
Yeah.
She's
one of my faves.
She's so, we can all have this conversation.
We're from the same hood in Connecticut.
No way.
Ish, yeah.
Well, like Fairfield County?
No. I don't know where she's exactly from, but okay. New Haven, outside okay. New Haven. I think we might have gone to the same synagogue. There's some weird connection.
We are going to have her on the phone talking about some Rachel Ray stuff because that's where she is now.
Yes, indeed.
So in about 5 minutes or so, we'll have Gabby on the horn. And then, I wasn't kidding, I got a guy because the St. Paddy's Day was this week. And I've always been a big fan of Irish oats. You like Irish oats? Like steel-cut oats?
Yeah,
I've always thought they were so cool. Like
they're delicious. When made correctly, they are delicious.
I kind of soak mine overnight, which is a little bit of cheating. And then it's almost like risotto.
My father
makes
really, really great oatmeal. It's like his thing.
That's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
So whenever I'm home visiting my parents, I get nice oatmeal.
It's a healthy breakfast choice. I've got a guy named John Flahaven, who is the founder of Flahaven's, not the founder, he's not the founder, he's the heir of the heir of the heir of the heir. It goes back to like 1780. It's one of the oldest oatmeal companies on planet Earth. We're going to have him in Ireland on the phone after Gabrielle Gershenson. So, all right, Missy Robbins. I first met Missy Robbins. Missy had some big shoes to fill. So Missy, even though she's from Connecticut, she kind of worked around New York and then she disappeared to Chicago, which may as well be, especially at that time when it wasn't all like Eater and there wasn't all of this cross-pollination of media. Like once you leave, like you were in Chicago in the aughts?
I was there.
Late 90s?
2003 to 2008.
All right. Well, there was some internet traffic back then, but basically,
Today.
Not like today. It was off my radar. I'll be honest. I mean, it was like Grant Hackett's, and we knew about a couple of the people. That was it. I mean, so you were there, which meant may as well have been in Siberia. And Andrew Carmichael.
Don't tell the people of Chicago.
I know. Sorry. Oh my God! Everyone in Chicago just threw a shoe at their computer. It's not true. It's a great town. It's a great music town. A great architectural town. Wilco. It's the home of Wilco, one of my favorite bands. And the blues. I mean, come on. And food. Incredible food town.
Yeah.
But I'm from New York. Yeah, well, it's where I am now. It's where I've been for 30 years.
Well, so. I'm back here.
You're so back, but you came reason. Back. Andrew Carmelini was the much heralded chef at Avoce. He had done a long stint at Café Boulud. This was his stepping out party. And the press was just, they loved him. He had Bullfrog and Ballroom behind him. The press loved him. I don't know if it was 2 stars or 3 stars, but basically he just blew up at the first Avoce. Now he's got a mini empire since he left. But you come in and it's like, Missy who? It's like, oh my God, because, you know.
Yeah, AJ, it was a scary moment. I remember
the PR people. Was it still Bullfrog that was repping?
Bullfrog, yeah.
And I remember
when I came in. Excuse me, it wasn't Bullfrog.
It was somebody else.
Yeah.
Whoever it was.
We went back to Bullfrog after a couple of years.
Whoever it was, you got to try this. And I'm like, oh, whatever. Like, you know, I don't know her. But I was doing radio back then, so I was in town 5 days a week. So I'm like, how can this hurt? I'll go for lunch someday or something. And I went, and it was like, what the F? It was like badass food. And it wasn't his food. It wasn't like you were doing his menu well. It was like, no, this was your menu. And yeah. It was great.
Thank you.
And then, just to make matters worse, because Avoce Madison was busy enough, they opened up Avoce Time Warner in the old Cafe Gray space. So you end up chef at 2 restaurants that are busy as can be, doing lunch and dinner. And we lived in the same neighborhood, and there's a reason I never saw you.
You and everyone else that knows me never saw me.
Yeah, I lived on Abingdon Square, and you lived just off Bleecker. And it's funny, I would bump into Juanita Lowe, I bump into Robert Seitzman, all our little networkers.
I slept in the West Village at that point.
Yes, from 1 in the morning until 7.
And Sundays, yes.
When you did laundry, and then you decamp back to like 2 ridiculous jobs. Congratulations on that. It was a great run.
Yeah, it was amazing. It really changed my career, and it was fantastic for me.
It was, and are you still doing a consulting thing with Laura Maniac?
I am not doing consulting. That was a short term fun project, which was fantastic, and I loved it, and I love Laura, and hopefully, Corpus, that was great. It was a very different thing for me to do. I learned a ton about wine. Laura's so. She is so generous with her knowledge.
I know. She's
and
so smart.
And
so
generous
perky.
With her wine as well. So you taste a lot, and we did that fun segment there.
We did a thing. I did a thing on wine bars, and I had to have Laura because she's a master sommelier. I mean, she's just bloody brilliant. She's young. She really knows her shit. Like obviously, master sommelier says it all. But more than that, she's got this great personality. She's ebullient, and she's got a really good chef at the Cork Buzz on 12th. A girl that I think worked with Danielle Ballou.
She's doing both now.
Oh,
AJ Scheller. Yeah,
she seemed great. I really liked her food. And then you were working out of the kitchen that thank you for laughing. I mean, I actually have a really nice kitchen in my current apartment, like for New York kitchens. It's huge. It's got a window that faces the Empire State Building. It opens up to I gutted the apartment when I bought it. I just had the ability to just say, okay, I'm buying it in the beginning.
It's awesome.
It's great. You how many square feet?
Kitchen? I don't know, 50?
It literally was...
I don't know.
You couldn't even call it a walk-in closet. If that was a walk-in closet, people would say it's not big enough.
I mean, just to give some perspective, it had 2 induction burners, 2, I like to call them Holly Hobby convection ovens, and a tiny, tiny little fryer, and a dishwasher standing 6 inches away from me. So,
and you couldn't literally put... Could 3 people fit?
We would fit two of us sometimes 2 to 3 plus a dishwasher. Yeah,
right. That was it. I mean, and if you did that,
it was too many. Three was too many. We had a prep guy that did a lot of our pastry stuff for us and did a lot of prep during the day. And if he was kind of there during a busy time, I'd have to move him along. It was I don't know what they do now, but
much
it
the
was,
same thing.
It was
sure.
it was a challenging kitchen, but it also kind of puts things in perspective that you don't need giant space to produce what I think we were doing was great food. I mean, I was really proud of that menu. Really, really proud of that menu. It was really fun for us to do that.
That squid tomato sauce thing. How did you cook that bloody squid again?
Was
it hours? It's
no,
A or B.
No. It was short.
Like,
so
it's the 90-second version.
Yeah.
Just let it open up, it's done.
Yeah, and then
so
cool it down.
Butter is so freaking good. And that sandwich on that bread with the...
The cotechino.
Oh, God. Describe that. Just walk me through the whole thing. This is total food porn.
That was a sandwich that I had in Modena. That Massimo Bottura sent me to this place. And he said, I said, where...
Famous butcher.
Yeah. No. Massimo Bottura for the chef from L'Osteria Francescana. You know, he has a 3-star Michelin restaurant. I said, where should I eat while I'm here? And he sent us to the market there. And behind the market, there's this sandwich shop. And he said, you have to have the Cotechino sandwich. And I'm not a huge sandwich person. Like, it's not my first love. And I ate this thing and was like, oh, my God. And we stood there and we were dissecting it. We were like, what's in this? So it was salsa verde, Cotechino sausage, which is a very, very fatty sausage made with a lot of pork skin in addition to pork meat and lots of aromatics and spices. Really hearty, hearty sausage on like a baguette with balsamic and aioli. And that's it. No cheese, no garnishes, no anything. It's just those sauces, Cotechino, and it's
so really herbal.
So we recreated
really
it.
Lush.
I mean, I can't tell you that I can take full credit as a recreation from something I ate that was so inspiring to me.
It was an insane sandwich. Liz, do we have Ms. Gershenson on the phone yet? Deary Poo. Okay, so we're gonna call her in. Just a second. Yeah, go ahead now. We'll get her. And I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick spot. We're going to make Liz's life easy because I'm torturing her with multiple guests, although the first one didn't work. Stay where you are. We're going to be right back with Gabriella Gershenson, and we're going to surprise her with having Missy on the same conversation, because why not? You'll need headphones for that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Food Talk. So if you want to make a great tomato sauce, where do you start? You start with great canned tomatoes. And what are the best? What's the gold standard? What do the best Italian restaurants use, you think? San Marzano tomatoes from southern Italy. You know, I've heard of San Marzano tomatoes, loved them, heard the whole legend thing, knew they were delicious, but I wanted to go visit the region. So sometime back, I don't know, 06, 07, we went to San Marzano in the middle of the packing season in August. They've got a really long growing season. Starts early spring, April, May, and runs all the way through October because the weather down there is beautiful. You're along the coastline of Naples there in the shadows of Mount Vesuvius, and these are really small family farms, really small, like a half an acre apiece, and that's how they make a living, is harvesting these tomatoes. But what makes them great is the typicity of everything, the style of the tomato. It's kind of a long tomato with a really thin skin, super fleshy, super sweet tasting off the vine. We can Cento San Marzano tomatoes in the prime of the season, which is August. They just slow production down, handpick everything. Those little basil leaves, yeah, they're all put in there by hand as well. It is the best canned tomato I've ever had, and you're going to love them too. There's a reason chefs love these things. They're San Marzano authorized from the beginning. The factory gets inspected every year. Hey, you want to make great tomato sauce at home? Start with great tomatoes. Cento San Marzano. That's what I use. Hey, folks. Mike Calameco here. Years back when I had my own restaurant, I had to figure out what kind of oils to use, you know, try to make money in the restaurant business. So, you know, the most expensive oil wasn't the choice, but I had to use an oil that was great, an oil that I would use at home and also for my customers. Came upon Colavita olive oil, which to this day still stands head and shoulders above everybody in that extra virgin category in the supermarket shelves. So much of the extra virgin category is dominated by labels that sound like they're Italian. You know, they end with an O or something like that. But the truth is they're tank farm blends that come out of Italy, but what's in the jar or the can is oils from all over the world that are just spot on price. It's commodity oils. Colavita is the only one that's an extra virgin that's 100% Italian origin traceable. It's a great company. They really built their brand on the U.S. market. They get the U.S. market. So if you're looking for a super extra virgin olive oil, use the one that I've been using for years on my table at home and in my restaurants wherever I was hanging my chef's toque, and that would be Colavita Extra Virgin. True Italian, great oil. So my first trip to Portugal was 2013. It was a wine trip. A bunch of us flew over and toured the country top to bottom. Fell in love with the place. The food, the wine, the scenery, everything. Had to come back, which I did in 14 to film. And this time, 8 days in country, top to bottom again. Food, wine, surfing, what's not to love? If you've never been to Portugal, it's an extraordinary place. Buffered on one side by the Atlantic Ocean, you've got great seafood, great wines growing in all those regions. You go a little inland, you've got more great food, incredible wine country. Of course, Port is the birthplace of Ports up the Douro. But my takeaway was, I thought I'd had a lot of varietals. I could keep a list of 130, 135 varietals I've had over my life. Portugal has 250 of its own indigenous wine varietals. And they're killer good. A lot of them growing there for centuries. It has some of the oldest viticulture in Europe. The sparkling wines from the Bijada, the great reds coming down south from those regions. What's not to love? Crisp whites, beautiful full-bodied reds, port wine, sparkling wine. So if you're not familiar with the wines of Portugal, next time you stop by at your local wine store, ask about them. I love them. I'm drinking a lot of them these days, and I think you will too.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, and this is Mike Colomeco. You are listening to HeritageRadio.org. I always forget that. Liz, remind me to say the .org part. That sounds so professional. It's not just Heritage Radio Network. It's HeritageRadio.org. Hey, my guest is on the phone, Gabriella Gershenson. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Good.
We have more snow coming. How's that sound? Isn't that great?
You know, people have very strange expectations about New York City in the winter. There's always, like, I don't want to say any swear words on the air.
You can. We're not on the air. Say it. Curse away with impunity. This is Heritage. We're
.org. For the magazine. So I'm
that's right. It's true. You're representing Rachel Ray. Thank you. Thank
you. There's always that final surprise snowstorm on like the 1st of April after everyone is convinced that it's the springtime, and without fail New York just throws a curveball. And I've lived here for 15 years now, and it's like, come on, you guys, get with the program. It happens without fail.
Yeah, it's winter's last fuck you.
Yep.
Yeah,
thank
I know.
You.
Sorry. It's just basically, yeah, it's, oh, yeah, you thought it was spring. You like those little daffodils? Here's 4 inches of snow just one last time to F with your brain. I know. I hate it. I tell you, I'm going to give you a heads up. You're not the only person here that's on microphone. We have an old, I don't want to say neighbor of yours, but you might have shared the same rabbis or synagogues or bagel stores.
Is it Missy Robbins?
Bingo!
Oh, yeah.
Missy,
hi.
All you need was one clue. You shared a rabbi.
We shared a rabbi. That's it.
Hey, Missy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, Missy's great. Missy, you know, she's opening up in BKLN this year.
Summer, yeah.
This summer.
I'm somewhat upset you're not going to be in Manhattan, but I will still
don't
come and
say
visit
that.
You.
Do not say that. There's a little thing that's called
mind
Uber.
That you're not in Manhattan, and I'll still come visit you.
Yes, but everything's in Brooklyn now. It's where all the energy. No, it's not true. It's so not true. But Brooklyn's cool, and that's where she's going to end up. But hold on, we're not here to talk about that, and we don't have a ton of time. Tell me about what's going on with your boss, the magazine. And I am such a Luddite, and on top of it, just special ed since day one. That the whole throwback Thursday /TBT. I'm like, what? I have to like Google what the hell that even means. And I do see it on like my Facebook page. Like people are putting pictures of like their surfboard collection or a shot of them from junior high. So what are you doing in the Throwback Thursday space with Rachel Ray?
Well, this is really fun. So I work for Every Day with Rachel Ray magazine,
yes.
And there's a cover story in the April issue that I got to write and help conceive. And the idea is that Rachel had a Throwback Thursday themed party and invited all her favorite celebrity chef friends, and they brought a dish that had some significance in their past, kind of like the food equivalent of a great Throwback Thursday picture, except, you know, in like edible form. So we have these fun retro recipes that each go along with an interesting story. Like my personal favorite, I have to admit, is Adam Perry Lang's potato chip chicken, which is basically like a crushed bag of Lay's chips. And, you know, that's the crust for the chicken, and it's fried, and it's got a ton of black pepper, and it's his grandma's recipe. And
it's fried? It's not baked, it's fried?
A lot of these guys, like Katie Lee and Michael Simon, they were really digging back to their past, and some of them hadn't even thought about these foods since way back when, like Katie Lee contributed a beef stroganoff because that was her first dinner party that she threw when she was 12, and her guest list was her grandparents. So it's cute. It's cute stuff. And what we're doing now online is until the beginning of April, we're having Throwback Thursday every single day on our Twitter, which is at Rachel Ray Mag, and our Instagram, same hashtag or tag rather, at Rachel Ray Mag. And it's all under the hashtag TBT Chefs and RRTBT. I know it sounds like I'm speaking in code right now.
Well, for me, it does. But for everybody under 35.
But basically, we're putting up really adorable pictures of famous chefs and asking our readers to guess who they are. And it's every day, sometimes twice a day. And we've had some seriously cute pictures up. And we're just encouraging our readers to put up their favorite throwback dishes and pictures of themselves and hashtag it RRTBT. And, you know, it's just a way to kind of keep the party going, so to speak.
Missy, I have to say that when I look back at pictures... When I look back at pictures of... food that I made, like, post-CIA, like, my when I thought I was a young aspiring. It's so fucking bad. It's horrible.
It's funny.
It's really funny.
I often talk about the first special I was ever allowed to do in a restaurant and what it was, and it was really not how I cook now.
Yeah,
what was it? Do you remember?
Absolutely. It was a seared scallop with a black bean and pineapple salsa.
Woo-hoo! Oh, that is
and
not
I can't
you at
believe
all.
I didn't even, get I fired.
Yeah, I look at pictures that I used to make for like dates. Like that'd be like, I'm a chef, and you'd come over to my apartment, and we'd take pictures with like a camera. And then, first of all, the shots are just terrible anyway because I'm like bad with a camera. It's like everything about them just looks like poop. Every so often on your Facebook page, someone will like put a picture of like their dinner that they shot, and you're just thinking like, don't do that. It looks like such garbage. I don't want to look at your bloody casserole or your stupid attempt at food styling. It's that's what all my early shit looks like.
I think that there are entire Tumblrs devoted to like food that looks like vomit and stuff like that.
All right, so give us again for those people that can write this stuff down. And I even if I wrote it down, I'm not sure I would be able to figure out how to get there. But how do you find these pictures? Because I'm curious now. I'm going to go to where? I'm going to turn on my computer and I'm going
to
go
Twitter or Instagram and search for Rachel Ray Mag. And okay. Rachel spells her name RACHAEL.
I didn't know that.
Then it's just, you know, it's all there in the feed in addition to the other stuff we do, like all of our recipes and everything. And our Facebook, it's just Facebook.com/RachelRayMag or Facebook.com/RachelRayMag. But it's funny. It's not a very complicated concept, but it's kind of adorable seeing pictures of people that we think we know and what they looked like before they became media trained, amazing, famous, successful chefs.
Well, you sound like you're having fun with this, and you sound great too. You sound like really happy.
Thank you. It's fun. It is fun. Okay. That's kind of the whole point.
Good.
And,
good.
You know,
fun's contagious.
Our world is a lot of things, but the fun element sometimes gets lost because we can take things a little seriously with food, and it's an interesting task to be like, okay, think of a fun party. And there you go.
All right. Gabriella Gershenson, it is always a pleasure. We'll get
Likewise.
You back on here. Keep the emails coming to me and keep pitching away because old friend, love what you do, and we'll get you back on this show either in person or via the telephone sometime soon.
I want some pizza, so let's do it in person next time.
That's the only reason I do this show. Ask Liz the engineer. She's like, oh, my God.
And please make sure Missy is there next time so we can all have pizza together.
Oh, won't that be fun?
We can hang. Yes. Sometimes I have friends come, and then like we'll just start drinking early. We go outside at 5 o'clock, and is that really that early? And we just start drinking and have dinner here. It's fun. The food's actually really good here.
Just don't rub it in, Mike. I'm over here in my office in Midtown. You guys are in Bushwick living it up.
There's probably a tossed salad place within a few blocks of you that with a pre-made horrible vinaigrette and some romaine and croutons.
Okay, we're not friends anymore.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I owe you a dinner. Gabriella Gershenson, big shout out for that hashtag TBT. Go to Rachel Ray, which is spelled differently than I thought. But I actually want to see those pictures. Thanks for coming on.
Sure. Look for Anita Lowe's pic. It's the cutest.
Anita Lowe.
Really? Awesome.
I have to see that. Anita, how cute. Thanks for that. Thanks for the heads up.
Okay.
Be well. All right. Stay with us for a minute, folks. We're going to have to not take a long spot. We're just going to bring up some music, and we're going to get Mr. John Flahaven, or Flahaven, I don't know how to pronounce the name. But he's a proprietor of the oldest family-run oatmeal business like on planet Earth. It's in Ireland. We have to call him in Ireland, so stay where you are, and we'll be right back with him, I hope. Isn't that cute? That is the cutest thing. I think for my show, that's the only one I want to hear is that chorus of like third graders in one of the public schools here. That's so cute. Kids are the best. Hey, my guest is on with us. And I am going to mispronounce his name right off the get-go because I'm famous for doing this even with simple names. All right. Is it Flahaven or Flahaven?
Flahaven.
Flahaven. All right. Well, I was, 50-50. Flahaven. Mr. John Flahaven, welcome to Food Talk. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks for staying up. It's late in Ireland right now. It's way past dinner time.
It's not too bad. We're only 4 hours difference at the moment.
Oh, that's funny. I thought you were like...
You change your clocks at a different time to what we did.
Okay.
So we'll be changing in about 2 weeks' time, and then it'll be going out to five hours difference again.
Gotcha. Well... Congratulations.
I'm only just back from the States. I was over there last week. And so, unfortunately, I missed being able to get there to the studio live. So you have me here by phone.
You did. That's why we're doing this. We're trying to get you on in advance of St. Patty's Day, but everyone's scheduled between yours and mine, and we couldn't do it. So I have your oatmeal. I've had your oatmeal, which you're now... how long have you been selling in the States? Is this new?
Well, we're selling in the States since about 2010. Prior to that, we were doing, just a very small amount of sort of into the ethnic Irish stores, but we've branched out and broadened out our base in 2010. So about 5 years we're going at that. But actually, even though we're sort of that long in the States, the company has been out around for an awful long time.
1780 or something like that?
Well, I suppose it depends on how far you want to go back into history. I know there was some... if you really wanted to go far back... There was some archaeological digs done around here when they were making a new road, and they found fragments of oats dating from around the 400 to 500 AD.
Wow!
So it would have been around the time of Saint Patrick as well, himself.
What is it about? What is it about? Tell me what it is about the Irish and oats. Is I mean, it's like steel cut oats. You guys are synonymous with sort of some products. Why is that? Because the grains, the grain does so well in your soil.
I suppose the oats, a particular type of crop that does well in the cooler, wetter weather. So it likes plenty of rain. It likes plenty of dampness. And now, it likes a bit of sun as well, but it's better. It's much better able to cope with the damp weather than either wheat or barley, and even corn or maize. Just it never actually. We don't have a hot enough summer to ripen maize over here. So farmers would be making a choice between growing wheat or oats or barley.
Fascinating. So I'm glad I asked that question. I had no idea that's true. And you do get a lot. I mean, Ireland's sort of famous for its funky weather. So it's a crop that just does well, that doesn't need a lot of sun, that does well in the moisture, that actually likes rain.
It does, absolutely. And we get plenty of it over here.
Well, the good news also these days is as people are doing more and more research into how to eat and what's actually good for you, we're all learning that whole grains are the way to go rather than processed grains. And basically what you're making, all of your products are considered a whole grain, right?
That's right. In actual fact, the oats just, oat milling is completely different from flour milling, and because what we're trying to, and it's most akin to rice milling. So we even have a machine here that's called a paddy separator, and it's not because we are Irish, but because it's used for the paddy rice.
Wow! So it's the same type of equipment they use for getting the. So you have to get what you're getting is this. You have to shake the grain out of like the case that it's picked in, right?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. That table separator or paddy separator is used after the shelling. So first of all,
shelling.
We take in the grain.
Yeah.
We dry it, and. You know, dry it for so it's suitable for storage, and then we take it all in our own premises, and then we take it down as we need it. When we bring it down, we give it a roasting using a steam-powered kiln, and after that, we take the grain. You do a lot of cleaning to it as well, but you. What you have to do then is you throw it, there's a machine, a sheller, which throws the grain against a plastic ring that dislodges the shell off the kernel, off the grain. So you're just left with the kernel, and that's the kernel or the groat.
The groat, that's the word, G-R-O, yeah, right, groats, right.
The kernel is then chopped into smaller pieces. Now, these smaller pieces are done on using steel knives on a steel drum. So that's why it's called steel cut.
That's my favorite one, by the way. That's my favorite of all the oatmeals is the steel cut. It takes a long time to cook. I soak it overnight sometimes, and it still takes 15, 20 minutes, but it's so good. It's kind of crunchy and delicious, and it's great for you for a breakfast.
Yeah, and one thing you can actually try and... makes a lovely porridge is if you add a little Baileys to it.
Baileys. Yes.
Baileys, yes.
You know, in Italy, sometimes I see the old guys in the morning with a little grappa with their espresso. You know, just get you going in the morning. A little Baileys in with my steel cut oats. Thanks so much for that tip. Now, all right, so my guest, we've got to run because we've got another guest coming in the studio in a minute, but that's John Flaheven. I pronounced it right this time.
That's right. Yes. No. So that's the company. So
and you'll see his.
We're back.
You'll see his products in the supermarkets. You can see your products in the supermarket. You have got a nice big tin. That's the steel cut oats, and the oatmeal's in like a classic like package that's cardboard. But really beautiful stuff. They sent me down some samples. I was eating it. Perfect time to eat it too. February this year was. If that wasn't steel cut oats, whether what is? Continued success. 1700s till now. Family owned business. One of only two, I think, still in Ireland that does this. Thanks for coming on the show. Sorry we missed you last week. Continued success and best of luck here in the U.S. market.
Thank you very much, Mikey.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the night in Ireland.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Now we're going to come back to Brooklyn. We don't need any bumpers or any breaks because I still have Missy in studio. Missy, let's cut to the chase here. So this is interesting news. So you took some time off after Avoce because, my God, like you actually had like 3 days off in a row, which must have been like really weird, like, what do you do that third day?
Did a lot of shopping and eating.
a stint with Laura Consulting, which was a great, two great minds, two of my favorite people in this industry, in this space, in this city. And then I guess I had to hear it like everybody else does. I mean, I look at Eater like once a week. I swear. It's not like something I give a shit. It's not like that whole feed, like what happened 3 minutes ago. It never mattered to me. And sometimes that's sort of the Eater buzz is like literally like what happened 3 seconds ago. And if you didn't know that, oh, my God, you're so stupid. But whatever. But I go to it because it is interesting. And I read Ryan Sutton's. I read some of the reviews just to see what these people think about. I mean, that per se thing was a bit much. Whatever. Whatever. But then I see you, and I think that's where I read it. Was it in the Times?
It was in the Times.
You know what? That's probably more likely. That's,
and then
was it Chefs on the Move? Was it Florence Fabricants?
Chefs on the Move.
That's what I see. Yeah. I do read that. That's because I'm old, and Florence is
I'm old, too.
Old.
That's what I read also.
It's cool. I read the review, and then I go down to Florence's thing to see who's opening up, because she's pretty cool, and she knows her stuff, and even her writing. She's actually a badass. She's really smart. Like she needs me to tell her that, but she is. The more I've met her in life and heard her talk and stuff, she knows of what she speaks. So tell me about this project, because like Gabriella, I mean, I don't know why I would have thought if you were going to do something, it would be on our side.
On my block.
Yeah, well, sit downtown, south of 14th Street, like where we all live. But you're ending up in Williamsburg. How did this come about?
You know, I had been looking for spaces for a long time and looking for the right partnership situation for, you know, basically since I left Avoce. I mean, I intentionally took some time off, but during that whole time, I was certainly looking for the next step and really trying to figure out what was going to be best for me. And I looked at spaces for a long time, and I had a variety of different possible partnership opportunities. And then I decided to partner with a friend of mine named Sean, and Sean knew Randy, who works with Matt, and we all kind of came together. And Randy and Matt from The Smile had been looking at the space in Williamsburg with two of our other partners, and they wanted to talk to me, and I said, you know, I'm not sure it's for me and whatever, and then they took me to the space, and then we kept talking, and I really liked them, and that was something that was really important to me, to find partners that I could relate to, and you know, Sean and mine's original intention was to do a project on our own, and I already like Sean, so that was a plus. But when I met Matt and Randy and the two other partners, Josh and Dan, it all kind of made sense. And everyone sort of brings something very different to the table, and the space is unbelievable. I mean, it's a freestanding one-story building, and it's an old auto body shop that we're converting.
And you're in that part of tell me if I'm wrong, because I
don't quiz me on Williamsburg.
You and me. But I Googled it because Florence had the thing, and then it's kind of like, I'm not going to say East Williamsburg, but it's kind of like going towards Greenpoint near McCarran Park.
It's two blocks from McCarran.
That's what it looks like. And I only know that because back in the day, before McCarran Park changed, they used to have that empty swimming pool where they had concerts. There was like a great concert venue. So I only know that neighborhood because I remember going. I think I saw Wilco there once, and big bands would play that venue because the pool was empty, and it was just, they'd set up on one side, and it'd just be like a big party.
I'm getting to learn the neighborhood better. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not there every day yet, or we're in construction, but it, you know, the project gave me an opportunity to really go out of my element. You know, I've worked in fancy buildings for a long time. I mean, for the last 10 years, I was at Spiaggia on a second floor in a fancy office building, and then I was at Avoce at a fancy office building and Columbus Circle, and not intentionally. And all of a sudden, you're standing on this corner and you're like, wow, this is a freestanding building. This offers a lot of opportunity. And again, it went back to the partnership too. There were these five really unique people. And they wanted to do something really special. They kept saying special, special, special. And that can mean a lot of different things. And we're defining that. But I think it just gives me an opportunity to cook for an additional crowd. I hope that my old regulars come and that people will come to Williamsburg. And there seems to be a lot of enthusiasm. And you know, I'm excited to just kind of do something in a different neighborhood and become... We want to be a real part of the neighborhood, and there's a lot of building that's gone on around us. I mean, I don't know if you've been seen where the space is, but if you look around it, it's all new condos and then this awesome brick building that we have with gorgeous windows. And
you're getting, I mean, it's not every day that you get to create from a blank space your restaurant. So, I mean, it's design the kitchen, design the layout as you want it. You've got all those years of experience behind you now to kind of know what works. This isn't like you're, you know, a rookie going up to pitch. This is like, okay, I know what I need. I know, you know, doesn't
the,
have
the
to-
difference is the space is much smaller. So, you know, I have been blessed with giant kitchens.
Yeah, I mean, you had the old Cafe Gray kitchen.
I had
which
the
is
old
insane.
Cafe Gray. The original Avoce had a pretty lovely kitchen as
upstairs and down.
Yeah, yep. As New York standards go, Spiaggia had an amazing kitchen. And before that, I was at a hotel. So I this is definitely what I'm bringing to the table is efficiency. What's most important in this kitchen, and it's not tiny, but it's certainly not as grand, and we don't have basements and preps. You know, I have a small prep space. But what's been most important in the kitchen design is functionality and efficiency and how to fit as much equipment and cooking space in the space. But part of what we were able to do is I'm building a very large wood-burning grill. And that's going to be sort of the showcase. So that's a big part of the kitchen also.
And that's in the kitchen? Is it open kitchen?
It's the line is semi-open, and then the
wood thing.
The wood grill is front and center. I mean, if you're sitting at the end of the bar, you will be in front of the grill.
How cool. I mean, that's
it's fun.
Have you gotten to play with one of those before in any of the restaurants? Not that I know.
Spiaggia was not I'm getting one from Grillworks with Ben is building it for me, and you know, we had a wood burning grill at Spiaggia, and we had wood-burning ovens in both the cafe, the dining room, and our private dining room. So I don't have a wood oven here, but that flavor that you get from cooking with wood was something I really fell in love with at Spiaggia, and I also worked in places in Italy that used wood-burning grills. And I just remember when I was cooking at Spiaggia, and I would go out to dinner in Chicago and I'd be like, something's missing. I got so used to eating meat with that
smoke.
That wood smoke. And it's a really particular flavor. And I don't like it like super smoky, but there's something about it that gives you this essence. And when you get really used to it, you start to miss it. And when I got back to New York and I was cooking at Avoce, I mean, there was a funny like reteaching of myself. Like I hadn't traditionally sautéed a piece of fish in 5 years. We would open the oven door and put it in. So I didn't build an oven here because I really like grilling. But we're gonna have there's gonna be a hearth surrounding it and a rotisserie and lots of gadgets on the grill.
How
so
cool!
Be fun.
Which reminds me, going back to like I was talking about David Santos at Loro, chef, one of, you know, my favorite places that I don't get to eat at.
You were right about him, by the way. That guy works 7 days a week. I see him in the neighborhood all the time, and he does not take a day off.
I don't think
So congratulations, David.
To put it simply, it's all that he thinks about. It's all that he wants to do. On the subway ride over, he lives in Roosevelt Island, so I guess he takes that little trammy, whatever. However he gets around, he just eats. And this is like, he's like got a, his brain does one thing only. It processes recipes and food. And this is all. He is like at his happiest cooking or thinking about cooking. But my point was about Wood Burning, that the one of my other favorite restaurants, one of my favorite chefs in the city, who I really don't get to see much at all, but I've got to go soon, is Frankie DiCarlo at Peasant. And Frankie's...
Yeah, I mean, he started it all, right?
He really did. And when the New York Times, somebody, one of those cub reporters, did a piece last year on Wood... Well, Seamus Mullen invented Wood. And I was like, fuck you.
I love Seamus, though.
So, dude, I love Seamus, too, but like, do your homework. Like, Frankie was in that space 8, 10 years ago.
Seamus inspired the design of my grill, actually.
All right. Yeah, Seamus is a badass. Seamus is a cool guy. Very cool guy. But I mean, that it's just like in the New York Times to get information wrong that's relatively new history. Like, I'm surprised the editor even let that article out of the hatch, because didn't anybody know what – I mean, when Frankie first opened up Peasant, even his sauté line was wood-fired. He had
guess. Yeah, I remember that. I haven't been there in a long time, but it's – I guess it's time for a visit.
Still about 85% of the menu comes off of either the rotisserie, which is wood-fired, and so he's got chickens and suckling pig and hen and all sorts of stuff in there. And then he's got a couple of those sort of pizza-type ovens, but they're not exactly pizza ovens, but traditional, like you'd see around Bari, around that part of Italy, domed, where food just goes in a vessel with a little olive oil, salt, pepper, whatever, and it comes out a couple of minutes later, perfect. And you're right. So that's a cool element.
That'll be fun for me. I'm excited about it.
And you've been always, I'm sure, big pasta program.
Big pasta. A lot of pasta. Yeah, I miss making pasta every day. I mean, I cook a lot of pasta at home now, but mostly dried. I mean, I have a small New York kitchen, but I happen to love eating dried pasta.
Can I tell you something? Honestly, me too. I mean,
I love making fresh pasta. I love the craft of making fresh pasta. If I wasn't a chef owner of my place, I would probably just sit in the back and make pasta all day. That would be my choice station.
Well, you can do that. You've got the chops. Your fingers are good at that stuff.
They're a little fat.
No, but you can. I mean, I'm so bad. I always joke every time I go to one of Michael White's places, or I always meet the pasta chef, and it's usually a Mexican guy or a Mexican woman out back. And I'll go to the chef like PJ or Michael and say, can you make that? And they're like, dude, look at these hands. You know, if I had to make your orecchiette, it'd cost $75 a bowl.
Yeah, right? yeah, so the pasta will be fun. And, you know, we'll do handmade, we'll do dried, we'll do extruded, we'll do the whole gamut. Which I'm excited for.
Beverage program? Because, the wine's going to be really used with this, too. You'll have beer and wine or full beverage?
Wine, full beverage.
Okay, so liquor, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
All right, okay.
We are going to do – I mean, the idea is to have a really accessible wine list where you can come in and drink great, unique wines that are priced appropriately, and where you can come and have a nice bottle, but not break the bank. So
and these days
and a small, very small list. We have very little storage in this beautiful space. So
how many seats?
75, and then we have an outdoor area as well.
Curb or out back?
Around all the way around.
Wow.
Not all the way around the building, in the front and then to one side, and then part of it'll be used. We have a cafe portion also, a takeout cafe. Very, very, very small. So there'll be an awesome coffee program and some pastries, some other items I'm working on, and then some seating outside. And then, that's a little cool facet of it, too. And that was another reason why this project was appealing. There's a couple different facets to it that'll make me never, ever be bored.
The takeout cafe part, just for dinner?
No. It's like an
all day long.
Like come and get your coffee and your morning, whatever you want. And
wow.
The hours are to be determined. I don't
for the restaurant.
The lunch and dinner for the restaurant.
Lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's a ton of – every time I go into that neighborhood – and again, I guess I'm calling it East Williamsburg. I don't know if I'm
You
right.
can call it – I think it's called North Williamsburg, actually.
See.
That's what I think it's called.
You might fuck it up. It's the Williamsburg that as you're heading towards Greenpoint, and it's near McCarran Park. That part of Williamsburg. But you're right. I mean, there's so much new development there. And that place, I mean, it's as expensive to live for those apartments is as expensive as Manhattan. There's
Very
no
true.
Discount anymore with being on this side of the East River.
Very true. Very true. So, yeah.
Are there restaurants in the area that are interesting around you?
Or do you have to get further up into main traditional Brooklyn?
There's not a lot around us, but we're not very far from Bedford. I mean, we're not far from Bedford. We're not far from the Wyeth, which is a hub of what's going on. It's really like pretty central, and we hope to really become sort of a hub of the blocks around us.
Your partners live in Brooklyn?
Two of them do.
So they know the hood?
Oh, very, very well. Yeah. Very well.
This is always a crapshoot with New York because there's permit issues and then more permit issues and then more permit issues and then inspection issues. But what's the estimated date for the opening?
We're saying early summer.
September.
I hope before September. No, we're
summer
we're
would
shooting,
be ideal.
We're shooting for early summer. I mean, we've been into construction long before we announced the project. So it's a little, the partners had the lease before I came on. So it's a little bit of a unique situation, a lucky situation for me.
The name?
Lilia.
What's the name? Where? From what?
Couple things. We wanted something very pretty. That was something important to sort of juxtapose the very masculine building. And I wanted something very food-oriented. And I kept looking, and I was looking at really Italian words, and we wanted to make sure that people could pronounce it. And I sort of went to the botanical route and started looking at botanical names for the things I like. And I started with fennel, which is a kind of a Missy Robbins signature ingredient in every form, and it's not a pretty name. So I got to Lilia, which is the root for the lily family of onions and garlic and all that stuff. And to me, it's sort of really significant because that's the base of so much cooking.
It is the base. I always wondered, at home, how many pounds of onions and garlic, especially, I go through personal consumption because we buy big cloves of garlic and soak them overnight and then peel them by hand and then put them in Cambros, those pint can in a week. Gone,
So besides the root, it's also to me a main ingredient. I love serving amazing roasted cipollinis in balsamic and things like that. So to me, it's a key ingredient, and I thought it sort of spoke to my cooking a little bit, and it sounded Italian enough, and it was pretty, and it satisfied everyone's needs.
The dining room, open sight lines, no beams. How's the space going to look? Wooden tables. I'm trying to picture this place. So you'll have a view onto the street. You'll have a view onto the grill. You'll have a little bar area.
But
open sight lines, kind of like loft, right?
Yeah, there's open beams on the
ceiling.
The original beams are on the ceiling. Concrete floors, wood tables. It's going to be beautiful. And, I mean, we want to keep the idea behind this was to not over design it. You know, the building is so beautiful and the windows and the brick and all of that stuff, that the elements we want to put in there are to sort of lighten it up a little and brighten it up a little bit, but also just keep the flavor of the building was really important. It's special. I mean, it's not a building you come across, certainly in Manhattan, very often. I think it's just kind of, it's a special place with very high ceilings. There'll be a sight line kind of straight through to the cafe, like a little doorway, so you kind of can come in and you'll see some activity going on in there. There's seating right in front of the kitchen. There's no hiding. Missy Robbins is not going to be able to hide, I can tell you that.
You're going to be busy. It's so cool to have you back on the block and on this side too, which is interesting.
I'm excited too. I think it's going to be new and different and fun and exciting and, good way to come back.
You're going to be living on the L train, too. Good luck with that, man. The L train's a nightmare. You'll be living in Uber. Uber.
So far, I'm being very good about taking the train and not Ubers. So far.
Yeah, well, that'll end.
We'll see at 1 in the morning how I feel about that.
Right, those 19-hour, 20-hour days with the opening. So in the last couple of minutes, now that you've had some time off, you've had how long since Avoce? A year? Change?
A little over a year, yeah. By the time we open, it'll be 2 years.
Where have you been eating around Manhattan that you really like? Just chef to chef talk.
Isotti is my go-to.
Which is in the neighborhood, Christopher Street. She's great.
It's just like I feel like I'm in Italy.
With that white marble.
I feel like I am in Italy. I drink a Negroni. I have great wine. I eat a pasta. I eat the most simple branzino ever, but I don't know what she does to it, but it's like crack. It's really like an amazing, amazing dish. Uncle Boone's has become a real favorite.
You like that? I have not been yet.
Anything spicy.
Okay. This is the couple used to work at Per Se.
Yeah.
Now they're in like Nolita or Noho, whatever it's called, doing Thai.
Yeah.
Or Thai-esque.
Yeah. No, it's Thai. I was in Thailand last year, and it makes me feel like I'm back there when I eat it. It's great.
Have you been to Pok Pok yet?
I have.
You like his food?
I do.
Okay.
I do, but I like Uncle Boone's.
Okay. No, that's
the. And Uncle Boone's has an amazing. An amazing tamarind margarita.
Damn, girl, Negronis, margaritas.
I don't even drink that much, by the way. By the way, I'm like a one cocktail and done kind of girl, but when I drink, I like something really tasty.
Well, you and I have to, we've been talking about this every time we see each other. Before you open the restaurant, at some point, let's you and I have just a dinner out on the town.
Absolutely.
We got to do this.
You pick.
I'll pick. Maybe it'll be Uncle Boone's. They'll give me an excuse to go to someplace new. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Missy Robbins has been my guest. If you haven't heard about her, you're a fool. She's great. She was at Avoce for years and years and years. Really blew that brand up. Opened the second Avoce in Time Warner Columbus Circle upstairs, the old Cafe Gray space. And now opening up, what's the name again going to be?
Lilia.
It'll be opening up. Date to be announced, but hopefully early summer in North Williamsburg.
North 10th and Union.
There's the address, North 10th and Union, in that, well, hipster paradise. It's over there. Land of the beard, the bees, the tattoos.
I'm going to become a hipster.
Get your tattoos.
My first tattoo's coming. I'm just kidding. I'm not.
I know. I don't see it. All right.
I have Vans on.
So, yeah. Well, that's Vans. Do you skateboard?
No, yeah. I'm skateboarding to Williamsburg every day.
That's you across the bridge. All right. Stay tuned. Next week, who are my guests this week? I know I've got Risto Zizofsky, who's one of my favorite sommeliers in the world. He's Michael White's sommelier for all the Altamirea restaurants. And Scott Anderson is coming in from Jersey. He's got a great restaurant in Princeton called Elements. It's going to reopen in a new space. So I know I've got at least two guests next week, and they're both in the studio, so no more phone stuff. See you next week. Take care. Hey, winter, goodbye, all right? This is the end. You're done. We're done with you. It was great. Thanks. Great to know you. All right. See you next week, folks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.